Good evening, everybody. And I'd like to begin with a number of thank yous. First of all, I would like to thank the session of Culibachy Reformed Presbyterian Church for allowing me this opportunity to give this series of four talks looking at the Covenanters in this village and district within the context of the church or the denomination as a whole in Ireland. A special thanks to David and to Nigel for making sure that the technology is all hooked up and the recordings take place and the data projector's working. I'm very grateful to that. And I'd like to thank all of you as well for coming. I know many of you have been here all 4 weeks, or others have been here maybe two or three of the weeks, and it really does, it is very encouraging that so many of you have come up, turned out week on week. Now, tonight's talk will be something of a whistle-stop tour over the last two centuries, looking at some of the different aspects of the history of this congregation. Tonight will be much more focused on this congregation than previous weeks. And afterwards, we do have some display banners up in the hall, and we also have a selection of historical items as well, historical documents that can tell us so much about the history of this congregation in the last 200 years. And I'm very grateful to those who have produced items and brought documents forward which can be put on display tonight. So I'm not going to speak for as long, or I'll try not to speak for as long as I have on other nights, and that'll give us more time to see the items and look at the display. yes, this is right, here we are. Bad start. Right. Yes, where we picked up last week, it was looking at the turbulent 1790s and the period in which Covenanters became, for a number of years, United Irishmen, and seeking to, in some cases, actually being involved in the 1798 rebellion. It was also the period in which we saw the building of the first meeting house here in Culibachy, right where we are now. Actually, the present building, of course, stands on the footprint of its predecessor. And I also finished by looking at the formation of the first synod of the Reformed Presbyterian Church in Ireland, which took place here in Culibachy on the 1st of May, that's today, of course, in 1811. So today is actually the 202nd anniversary of the formation of the first Reformed Presbyterian Synod, and it took place here, right where we are now, in Culibachy. Now, what had led up to the formation of the Synod was a rapid expansion in the Reformed Presbyterian Church in Ireland. In 1800, there were only three ministers, and yet there were 30 congregations. So each of those three men had an incredibly heavy workload. But in the first decade of the 19th century, quite a number of men were ordained as ministers and then installed in these vacant congregations. In 1810, there was a decision taken to create four separate presbyteries, geographical presbyteries, northern, western, southern, eastern, and then to meet, that these four presbyteries, representatives from these four presbyteries, would meet as a synod. So you can see, for example, the Northern Presbytery, the ministers at that time were William Staveley, it was Culibachy in Kelswater, Joseph Orr, Knockclucklum in Ballylagan. That would be, well, Ballylagan is still a congregation, but Knockclucklum would really be a forerunner, you might say, of Drumbald congregation. William John Staveley, who was the son of William Staveley, Derwick in Kilrats, North Antrim. And then a congregation which doesn't exist anymore, Dunbow. But Ballyrasheen, which I suppose would be a forerunner of the Ballyclabber congregation, it was vacant at that time. You can see the representative elders as well, and the man who was the representative elder from this congregation was Robert Sloan. So we see tremendous expansion in the Reformed Presbyterian Church in that first decade of the 19th century. Now, there were various explanations for this, but the great Presbyterian historian James Seton Reed, who wrote a series of volumes on the history of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland in the early part of the 19th century, wrote in his one of his books that the fidelity with which their ministers preached the peculiar doctrines, or the specific doctrines, you might say, of the gospel was unquestionably the grand secret of their success. This was an era in which many Presbyterians, ministers would have been more inclined towards Arianism, denying the divinity of Christ. But the Covenanter ministers were very clear in preaching the gospel as they clearly understood it from the scriptures. And that, according to Reid, was certainly, as he says, the grand secret of their success. Now, we do have for the Antrim meeting, the congregations of Cullibacky and Kilswater, a session book that survives from as far back as 1789. It's one of the very earliest session books. In fact, I think it is the earliest surviving session book of any RP congregation in Ireland. And looking through it, it's interesting to see the matters that the session was dealing with at that time. This session would have been composed of representative elders, or not representative, but the elders from both Kilswater and Cullibacky. So some of the items he dealt with included swearing before a magistrate in order to administer a will. Many of these relate to the church's position of dissent from the state. They would not recognise the authorities because civil authorities had rejected the idea of a covenanted kingdom. And so the covenanters would not recognise the state. They would dissent from the political establishment. So, for example, swearing before a magistrate in order to administer a will was in some way recognising the authority of the state. And that was something that the position they had was that they should not engage in an activity like that. Neglecting communion in society meetings, well, that was considered a serious offence not to be involved in the life of the congregation. Other things, slander or illegitimacy, the regulation of the societies, the society structure, the idea that within each congregation you had a number of societies made up of families living in a geographical area. Voting in the franchise, where the historic position of the church is that not to vote, because in voting, again, you are recognising the state and they dissented from that. The session would also regulate disputes between members over matters such as lands or inheritance, or even matters such as selling poor quality yarn, bribery, Sabbath breaking. I was also concerned with the distribution of money to the poor, looking after the needy, the destitute, the infirm. These are all matters that the session dealt with, and these are matters that can be found in the earliest session book that survives for this congregation. The original of that is in the public record office in Belfast, although because it is in such a fragile condition, it has actually been closed until repair work can be carried out to it. Now, William Staveley, as we mentioned already, was mentioned quite a bit last week. But Staveley is the minister here in Cullibacky from 1800 to 1813. At that time, he was actually responsible for both Kilswater and Cullibacky. But in 1813, the two congregations separated, became two very clearly distinct congregations. Both Cullibacky and Kilswater wanted Staveley, but he chose Kilswater, and he remained in Kilswater until his death in 1825. You can see his tombstone there at against the wall of Kilswater Meeting House. You can see the book title, the title page of the book that he wrote back in 1775, Truth Restored, or The New Mode of Swearing Religious Oaths. Again, this was a condemnation of the demand by the civil authorities that in swearing an oath, the Bible ought to be kissed. Staveley was giving a very clear argument that the scriptural way of swearing an oath was by upraised hand. So that's the title page of his book published in Newry in 1775. Now, Staveley was succeeded here in Cullibacky 5 years later by Clark Houston. He was from Mahara. In fact, there seems to have been a strong Covenanter community around Mahara at one time. Ordained, first of all, in Limavady in 1814. In fact, the congregation here a section of his of the congregation here were very keen to have him in 1814, but he was ordained in Limavady instead. But he did come to Cullibackie in 1818, installed here at that time. Clerk of Synod, 1827-40. And in 1824, the congregation numbered 1,120 people. 410 of those were communicants, and there were 182 families. But think, over 1,000, well over 1,000 people who could be counted, numbered among the congregation at that time. How, you know, anything more than a proportion of them could ever fit it into the meeting house? It's hard to believe. What it did mean is that communions were often held outdoors, outdoors in the churchyard just behind us. And we have actually a poem written in the latter part of the 19th century by a local man, John Given. And he wrote it when he was, he's looking back to when he was a boy. So this poem was looking back to an event, the communion service, that probably took place in the late 1820s. And this is just an extract from that poem. I remember well that summer morn, so calmly sweet and fair, the hamlet all so Patmos-like, so hushed, so mute. 'Twas a hill folk held their feast unto their temple was the lone churchyard, the gown of their board. Here they sat. So an outdoor communion service held here in probably the late 1820s, remembered by John Given later in life. And we actually have, thanks to Wallace McCollum, we have some of the early communion tokens here tonight. Wallace has left in a basket of these small communion tokens, and they're actually inscribed CC, which I imagine means Cullibackie Church or Cullibackie Covenanters. These are the communion tokens that were used in days gone by. So you can have a look at those afterwards if you'd like. Now, in the 1830s was a period of rancor and dispute within the Reformed Presbyterian Church. It was a very sad period, really. The church does not emerge from it with much credit. It was a discouraging, disappointing time. It basically revolved around the church's attitude towards the civil magistrate and the powers that the civil magistrate should be able to exercise. It's a dispute that's quite hard to explain. It's largely theoretical. It made little sense to outsiders. But it did result in a schism taking place within the Reformed Presbyterian Church. The two main protagonists were, on the one side, the Reverend John Paul, who was the minister of Lochmourne and Carnmoney. Paul was a man of many years' experience in the Reformed Presbyterian ministry. He was a very distinguished figure. He was, you might call him, a household name in the province. He had, was one of the great defenders of orthodoxy in the face of Arianism in the early 19th century. On the other side was the Reverend Thomas Houston of Knockbracken, a much younger man, and a man who, in his childhood, had actually attended the church here in Cullibackie. Houston was from Donegore, and his family had originally gone to Kelswater, but when he was 9, they joined Cullibackie. Paul, on the other hand, was actually from Tobernaveen. So again, not very far away from where we are now. Matters came to a head in 1840, when a section of the church withdrew from the parent body, from the synod, and Paul was the leader of that group, and he and a number of ministers and congregations separated, and in 1842 established what was known as the Eastern Reformed Presbyterian Church. And among the congregations that separated at that time was Cullibackie. So for a period of over 60 years, Cullibackie was outside the Reformed Presbyterian Church, and instead it was part of the Eastern, what was known as the Eastern Reformed Presbyterian Church. Now, after Clark Houston died in 1852, he was succeeded by John Galway McVicar, a figure of some importance in Mid Antrim in many different ways. Born in Belfast, and initially the minister of the Eastern Reformed Presbyterian Church at Newton Ards. He was minister there from 1850 to 53. He was installed here in Collibaki on the 9th of August, 1853. Now, early in his ministry, a manse was built in the village. And you can see there the photograph of the manse. It's quite dark. It's a 19th century photograph. Built at a cost of £313 in 1854. Before that, the ministers would have been required to provide their own accommodation. One of them, I think Houston, in fact, lived where Ballymena Academy is now. Now, in 1859, there was a great religious revival in Ulster. It hadn't, of course, come out of nothing. There had been years of preparation and for this revival in 1859. But it really started in Mid Antrim, in Connor. You can see... I'll come back to that in a moment. You can see that this plaque put up by Ballymena Borough Council over at Tawny Brack near Kells, marking the site of the old Sabbath school, saying behind this pillar was a location of fervent prayer meetings before the 1859 revival. Now, the attitude of the Reformed Presbyterian Church to the revival varied somewhat. Some ministers were very enthusiastic about it. In my home congregation of Brady, the minister, the Reverend Josias Chancellor, took an active part in the revival meetings, in preaching, in prayer meetings, in discipling the new converts. Other ministers were a bit more cautious. Associated with the revival were some extremes and extravagances, prostrations, very significant emotionalism associated with it. So some were cautious, but some threw themselves into it wholeheartedly. And one of those was John Galway McVicar here in Collibaki. He was very much involved in the revival. And we see here what he, particularly in his memoirs, you might say, he writes... on a particular occurrence, one particular day that he's preaching here in Collibaki. And he writes, "On the Lord's Day, I tried to preach about the unsearchable riches of Christ, but I was too weak and my emotions too strong to enable me to do so at any length. I went on connectedly, by and with the help of God, till I began to speak of the fullness of Christ. Then I became overpowered. Some of the congregation, fearing that I would be injured by overexcitement, came up into the pulpit and asked me to proceed no further at that time. I felt that they were right and closed at once. Some of the elders offered prayer, and the much moved congregation separated." That's just his recalling one particular day, an incident in his ministry here in Collibaki during the revival. Now, McVicar's views began to change on a number of issues. And in particular, his views changed on the issue of baptism. And he began to move away from the historic reformed position of infant baptism and go over towards the Baptist position, the idea of believers' baptism. And as a result of that, he withdrew from the ministry here in Collibaki. He resigned his charge in 1860, and he was one of the key figures in founding the Baptist Church in Ballymena. He was with the Ballymena Baptists for some years before he left them and founded the First Brethren Assembly in Ballymena. And later he went over to England and ministered in London. Something that has survived from McVicar's time here in Collibaki. This was sent to me recently by a gentleman in America, and it's a certificate of disjunction issued to his ancestor, James Knowles, in 1856. And it's actually signed John G. McVicar. And this was given to James Knowles when he emigrated to America. It was a traditional thing to do if you were emigrating. You would get a certificate of disjunction. This would show that you were in good standing in the congregation that you were leaving. And whenever you were joining a new church in America or wherever, you would present this certificate to the session and you'd be accepted into membership. But this was presented to James Knowles on the 4th of March, 1856, signed John G. McVicar. This is to certify that the bearer was baptized and brought up in the Reformed Presbyterian Congregation, Cullibackie, of which his father is an elder. James Knowles have ever had an excellent character. His conduct in youth has given reason to hope a manhood of honesty, sobriety, industry, and piety. He is affectionately recommended to the brotherhood and good offices of the church in America. John G. McVicar, Reformed Presbyterian Minister. Signed, Cullibackie, County Antrim, 4th of March, 1856. Now, McVicar was succeeded by Joseph Moody, who was from Cullyvenny, Coleraine. He had previously been the Minister of Convoy from 1858 or thereabouts to 1860. Comes here in 1860 and exercised the ministry lasting nearly 40 years. There are some significant events that take place while he is here. A schoolroom is built in 1869, but probably most significant is the fact that in 1887 the meeting house was renovated and enlarged, the old galleries removed, and the transept added. So the church, from hitherto having been a rectangular building, now has the more traditional, in some ways, Presbyterian T-shape to the church. And that's a church that was in use, of course, here up until 2007. So the extension at that time of the transept, that was 1887 during the ministry of Joseph Moody. Now, Moody was succeeded by Andrew Fallon, who had a fairly short ministry here, born in Ballymoney. At this time, the Eastern Reformed Presbyterian Church was beginning to fade away, one could say. It was weakened. There was a shortage of ministers. And Fallon was of the opinion that Cullibackie should join the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, that it should come under the auspices of the of PCI, the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church. Now, this put him at odds with his elders, who were very much of the opinion that this was a Covenanter church, and if the church was going to go anywhere, it should go back in with the Reformed Presbyterian Church. And that resulted in a ruction between Fallon and the session, and in the end, Fallon leaves in 1902. He later ministers in London and in North Shields, near Newcastle. And in 1905, Cullibackie returns to the Reformed Presbyterian Church, comes back into the parent body. They comes back to the fold from which it had departed around 60, a little over 60 years before. The first minister of Cullibackie, after it comes back into the Reformed Presbyterian Church, is James A. Lyons, who's ordained here in 1906. His father had been the Reformed Presbyterian minister in Newry. In 1911, we have the Centenary Synod held here in Cullibackie. The significance of that is extremely important in terms of the history of the church and the fact that they chose very deliberately to have it in Cullibackie. The moderator at that time was the Reverend R.J. McElmoyle of Dervock. And remarkably, 50 years later, when the 150th anniversary synod was held in Cullibackie, R.J. McElmoyle was again moderator. So he exercised a ministry lasting over 60 years. And so it's remarkable that 1911, he was moderator. In 1961, he was moderator. I doubt if that will ever be repeated again. Early in Mr. Lyons' ministry, the manse is renovated. It's actually raised to a second story. You can see, remember the old photograph? Well, there is the manse after it was renovated. You can still see the door case with that distinctive archway. So the one-story house extended upwards. In 1912, William Shaw published a history of Cullibackie Reformed Presbyterian Church. He actually wrote two wonderful books, one on Cullibackie, on the village, and the other specifically about the Reformed Presbyterian Church. Shaw was an elder here for many years. He was a solicitor, and he was the first mayor of Ballymena after it was granted borough status in 1939. Previously, he had been chairman of Ballymena Council. So in 1939, he's the first mayor of Ballymena. Now, just as Shaw was writing this little book, he was finishing it off in September 1912. Just at the time, there was considerable excitement about the Ulster Covenant. And the Reformed Presbyterian Church, if I said it was divided, I don't mean it was a serious differences of opinion, but the response to the Ulster Covenant did vary within the Reformed Presbyterian Church. The church itself issued, you might say, a statement warning people not to get too wrapped up in this idea of covenant. Don't be led astray by the use of the term covenant into thinking this is the true covenant. But the numbers of people in the church, did sign the covenant. And it did vary quite considerably. Tim Donaghy, Reverend Tim Donaghy, has done some research in this, and he's found that, for example, in the Milford area of County Donegal, over 80% of Covenanters signed the Ulster Covenant. In South Derry, about 65% signed the Ulster Covenant, whereas in North Antrim, Kilrats, less than 30% of people signed the Ulster Covenant. And what would seem to be the case is that the numbers of Covenanters signing the Covenant was inversely proportional to the overall Protestant population in any locality. So North Donegal, where Protestants would have been very much in the minority, many more Covenanters signed the Covenant than was the case in North Antrim, where they were very much, Protestants anyway, were very much in the majority. I haven't done a full-scale study of who signed or who didn't sign in Cullibackie, but I was able to find that representatives of the McKelvey and Wright families both signed the covenant. Robert McKelvey of Donegal and Hugh Wright of Craigs. Although, interestingly, on the other hand, I couldn't find any indication that members of the Knowles family signed the covenant. So it did vary, even within congregations, who signed, who didn't sign. And, of course, 100 years on, we simply don't know, we can't fully understand what motivated people to sign the covenant, or maybe not to sign the covenant, as the case might be. I mean, not every Wright, for example, signed the covenant. The only one I could find was Hugh A. Wright. Now, in the First World War, representatives of the congregation did play their part. An absolutely wonderful item here was this produced by Wallace, The Role of Honour, Fight the Good Fight. And you can see it's a prayer for sailors and soldiers. And then we have a list of those from the congregation who were serving, who they were serving with, whether it was, for example, the Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers, for instance, or the Royal Army Medical Corps. And then a statement of, their status, their position, what was actually happening to them. And it's amazing just to look down. Quite a few times we see references to men being gassed, bringing home the horrors of the First World War. Excuse me. We have James Lowry, who was serving in the Royal Irish Rifles. And we have a note here that he was missing on the 16th of August 1917. And so I looked up the Commonwealth War Graves Commission website, and I found that rifleman James Lowry, in fact, died on the 16th of August 1917, aged just 19. And it tells us he was the son of Thomas Lowry of Fina, Collibaki, County Antrim. He's buried, or the memorial to him where he's remembered is at the Tyne Cot Memorial, which is in Belgium, near Passchendaele. So that's something that I'm sure will intrigue many people afterwards. Now, Lyons was succeeded by Mr. Lyons, Samuel W. Lyons, who was here from 1926 to 1945. And at his time, the lecture hall was built. And, of course, the stained glass commemorating the building of the lecture hall in 1929 has been inserted over the doorway coming into the meet and greet area. Also, shortly after that, the graveyard was extended. And you can see very clearly from this aerial photograph the difference between the old graveyard, going back to the building of the meeting house itself, and the new graveyard that was laid out in 1930, thanks to the generosity of two members of session. We also have this very interesting review of the period 1931 to 1935 that was published by the session, published at the instigation of the session. And I've picked out a few interesting items from this. David has very kindly photocopied made some photocopies of this review, and these will be available on the table in the sports hall afterwards. But just in that 5-year period, 69 new members, 69 people received into communicant membership. From 1931 to 36, there were 28 baptisms in the church. This also was a period in which the church was pebble-dashed, a new ceiling was added, and a platform in front of the pulpit was erected. Interestingly, there was actually a committee to assign seating accommodation in the church. Seats were free, but if you wanted a seat, you would go and speak to someone on this committee. There's also a note in this requesting worshippers to be seated 2 minutes before the start of the service. And it's also noted in the review that in 1934, William Boyd McKelvey resigned as leader of praise after 54 years of service and was succeeded by John McKelvey of Donegal. We have from 1946 this wonderful presentation volume. Is this to the same John McKelvey?
Yes.
It is. To John McKelvey, just mentioned, in commemoration of his faithfulness in leading the praise. It's one of these wonderfully illustrated volumes. I'm sure you've seen examples of it. David again has scanned in this, and so you can have a look through the presentation volume afterwards. But you can see it has these lovely watercolours of the old meeting house, the lecture hall, and then the McKelvey family home at Donegal. Now, I don't want to give the impression that nothing interesting happened in the last 50 years, but I am going to go through this very quickly. I do feel it's a task for someone in 50 years' time to do when this course is being repeated. But just to very quickly go through, after the war, the First Minister was Mr. Gilmore, William J. Gilmore, who was here from 1946 to 74. Then we have Wallace McCollum, from 1978 to 2001, and Wallace is of course still very much involved in the congregation. And then our current minister, the Reverend Philip Moffat, who was ordained in 2008. In 2011, Synod was again back here in Collibaki, the 200th anniversary Synod here, once again, a meeting in the same place that the very first synod was constituted back in 1811. And finally then, just to show some images of the different places that the congregation has met over the last 350 or so years. the round hole at the Laymore, where the early Covenanters gathered in the open air, this natural amphitheatre, meeting there perhaps from the latter part of the 17th century, and maybe, who knows, but maybe hearing the likes of Alexander Peden or David Houston preach to them. It was certainly used well into the for most of the 18th century as well, for it's not until 1789 that the first meeting house is built here in Cullibackie. That church is then extended and renovated, transept added in 1887, and that church continues in use for about 120 years until the new church that we're using now was completed and we began to meet here in late 2008. So it gives you an idea of the story succinctly over a 300-plus year period, and hopefully the story has many more years still to come. So thank you very much for listening, and I hope afterwards we've time to chat and time to see the documents and displays and everything else. Thank you very much.